and now moving to the Midwest and to our first remote presenter. I'm delighted to introduce Ravi Maduri. He will be talking to us about G-Ravi, which is the Grid Rapid Application Virtualization Interface for Service-Oriented Science. I met Ravi recently at a Department of Energy SIDEC conference. He's with the Globus Alliance. Also, he's with one of the Centers for Enabling Technology that I'm supporting at DOE, the Center for Advanced Distributed Petascale Science. Joining him is Brian Thiemann, also from Argonne Lab in the Advanced Photon Source. As we mentioned a little earlier today, virtualization, one way to think about it is a better understanding of context and context sensitivity. So the reuse can rise to the top, the simplicity, the level of ease of access also rises to the top, and I think you will very much appreciate this presentation. So welcome, Ravi, and thank you and Brian for joining us.
Thank you, Susan. Susan said, I work at Argonne National Laboratory, and I wear, like many of you, wear different hats at different times. I want to start off by thanking Susan for giving us this opportunity to share some of the knowledge we have and we gained by creating the system. And hopefully it would be useful for some of you, and by the end of the presentation in the later weeks you would contact us for more information. So without further ado, I would like to start my presentation. I also want to thank the people who are involved in making this possible, especially Josh Overhoff, who works out of Lawrence Berkeley Labs, Kyle Chad, who was my summer student from New Zealand, Dina Nath, who works at the University of Chicago, and Chem, who is a undergrad student from CMU. He's our guinea pig. He's our naive user who doesn't have any sort of familiarity with the technologies that we are talking about. Not the least, my boss, Ian Foster, who is sometimes referred to as the father of the grid computing. So on to slide number two. So this is my agenda here. I want to talk about service-oriented science means, and how Gravy, that's how we call the tool. It's an interesting story. I will tell you when I come to the slide on Gravy as to how we came up with that name. Software as a service, and I would talk about some examples from industry and how it's been successful as a paradigm in industry. And from I'll draw some examples from scientific communities that we are involved in and engaged in, and talk a little bit about why we are excited about this and how this is going to help in achieving the objectives of science much faster and rapidly. And talk a little bit about the benefits of virtualization, and sustainable infrastructure is one of the things, the key things that I want to talk about. And then we'll go into a little bit deep into different aspects of service-oriented science, and in the end I want to talk about how this is going to help you and how it makes sense to you, and take some questions. And then I'm going to turn it to Brian, who is going to present his perspectives. So the way we wanted to structure this presentation is, and I want to say it up front, is that what we want to have you guys take away is that this system is, you may already have some applications that are suitable for this software. And if you, during the course of presentation, if you think that you are one of them, we would be more than happy to help you. The goal is that we want to make it as trivial as possible for an end user to run his applications on a high-performance computing infrastructure, or on a virtual machine clusters. So please keep in mind that we want to we are here to work with you to make it easier to enable your applications for to run on high-performance petascale computers. So I keep hearing Web 2.0 and Web 3.0 in examples from the audience and from introductions of people who are part of the presentations. And so it's sort of a nice segue into my talk. I refrain from using Web 2.0, 3.0 for the fear of the overloading of this, that these terms have right now. They can mean different things to different people, but in my slide number 3 that I'm on right now, what I have is a set of examples that are gaining a lot of traction and making a lot of money for the companies involved in their infrastructure. One example is Salesforce.com. What I mean by software as a service is that the new paradigm is that just how you would download, you would write PowerPoint slides using PowerPoint that you downloaded and installed on your laptop. Software as a service is a paradigm where the software is not really installed on your machine, you use it as a service. So a bunch of examples come to my mind, and I wrote them in my slide here. I use Google Calendar, Google Docs, a lot of Google services that are, and these are all software that are exposed as a service. And Salesforce.com is a classic example of how this company is making millions of dollars by taking away the HR operations of different companies and providing them as a service to these companies. And I'm sure most of you have already heard of remarkable success Amazon had by exposing their databases and their storage as Amazon S3 and their computing infrastructure as Elastic Computing Cloud, the EC2 model. And I know this for a fact. A lot of people use Flickr to share their photos, to manipulate the picture. So when you look at all this, a common theme that underlies all these different applications, Facebook, Microsoft Live, the list goes on and on, is that you are interacting, the end user is interacting and using a software that is provided as a service by a different company. This sort of gets us into a lot of other buzzwords, virtualization, where the infrastructure is sort of hidden from user. So these are all the examples of software as a service that the industry, that a bunch of companies are using as a paradigm. And on to slide number 4, which is this is one of the papers that Ian Foster, who's my boss, wrote for Science Magazine in 2005. He sort of applied the software-oriented architecture, the SOA, as some people may call it, to how science is done. And in doing that, he postulated that science could be done much faster if we apply the service-oriented architecture principles in how we do science. The principles of service-oriented science could be said in the following way. So if people create these services for whatever applications they have, they create these services that I would like to, as a researcher, I want to discover if there is a service that is available out there already that I can reuse, and I want to compose these services into a workflow, and then create a new service that I can publish as a new function that others can reuse. So this is a sort of a application of software-oriented architecture that has gained a lot of traction in how business processes are run in industry to scientific domain. And then it's not just enough to sort of publish, compose and publish the functionality as a new service. We need to be providing infrastructure to host these service, these functions, and then so that the user doesn't have to, the creator of the service doesn't have to become the master of hosting these services securely and reliably, and then make sure that the service scales. So this is a key underlying paradigm for a software system of gravy. The service-oriented science is an architecture paradigm that we wanted to follow and prototype and implement and provide it as a reusable infrastructure software for scientific communities. So on to my slide number 5. You can see that I highlighted the people create services aspect. I mean, this presentation is obviously suitable for in-person presentation, but we'll try and do our best on telecom. So creating services. So this is the first step of the service-oriented science architecture paradigm. I want to take a couple of minutes and talk about why. The introduced system and talk a little bit more on gravy and how these tools are used in creating services. So if you are familiar with web services, there is inherently a lot of complexity involving in creating these web services. So some of us, so we are part of the I'm a CA Big. I heard one of the participants saying that she's part of the CA Big program. I'm one of the software architects of the CA Big program.
Well, that's why it seems so familiar, these ideas.
Yes, I'm one of the main architects of the CA Big program. We call it the CA Grid, which is a software suite. We worked with a lot of bioinformaticians and oncologists and in researchers, and when we provided them with tools, and the goal is that the tools should not be oriented towards software developers. I mean, our end users are doctors and researchers. So the tools should be a lot more easy to use than they were at that point. So the goal was that we want to reduce the complexity and reduce the barrier to entry for a lot of users for mass adoption for creating these services. So Interviews is one such tool that we co-created with our collaboration from Ohio State University as part of the CA Big program, which is a framework that enables fast and easy creation of grid services. So it's a GUI based a graphic user interface based authoring tool, and the goal is that the service developer to worry about just his application, just his piece of functionality that he wants to provide, and forget about and rest of all the service oriented should come easily, we should be able to hide this and be able to easily generate that for the user, and not have user worry about a bunch of the gridness of his service. So the Introduce framework integrates any serious software architect would tell you that it's not just the creation of services. There are a lot more factors involved in providing a infrastructure service. So Introduce is a framework that integrates all other components that that the service-oriented science talks about. For example, it integrates the security infrastructure, the index service for registry, for discovery purposes, and so there's cancer research is all about semantic based reuse and discovery. So integrates cancer data standards repository so that when you create a service, it's easy for you to share that service to other users. It's easy for you to explain what it does to other users because you are using standard oncologies and vocabularies that your researchers are familiar with. One thing I wanted to point out that Introduce is it's a piece of software that you could reuse it in any discipline. It is not tied to cancer research per se. That's the beauty of creating this software that you could potentially reuse that are not tied in with the discipline that initially made the creation of the software possible. So in that context, I asked Brian to Brian used all these tools, and he works at Advanced Photon Source. He is as far as any of us from cancer research, for example. So that's the takeaway the software is not related to cancer research, but it could be reused and applicable to different areas of science. I'm sure a lot of the technology architects and software architects in the group would agree, the real cost of software is not writing the software, it's maintaining the software. So that's why there's a lot of push on the open source software paradigm where you want to reuse and distribute the cost of maintenance of software across multiple communities. Introduce provides, that's the model we used in creating Gravy, because we wanted to focus on the function that we want to provide and reuse as much of the software that we can from other communities that are being well maintained and supported. Introduce is slide number 8 right now. So Introduce provides a standard way of dealing with a lot of these moving parts that these web services may have. Like, for example, advertising your services, showing that your service exists somewhere and letting users discover them and invoking the services, security aspects of these services, the stateful resources. So these are all the standard web service speak, right? So Introduce makes it easy and intuitive for end users to create these services and maintain them without a lot of effort and a lot of knowledge of how and what a web service or a grid service is all about. On to slide number 9. So this shows a graphical representation of how Introduce works, how you can how you can use Introduce to create a grid service or a web service without just by following a software wizard, and how you can configure your service so that you can have your service advertise itself to a centralized registry, how you can make your service secure so that you know who is accessing it, so Introduce does a lot of code generation for you so that the user doesn't have to worry about enabling enabling his application into a grid service. It also so we took Introduce and we extended it. We added we took one more step towards making it easy to use for users who just have a simple application, a command line application, or an executable, if you may, that the users run periodically with the data set. And they would like to expose its functionality as a service for other users that they collaborate with in their virtual organization. So what we did was we created something called GRAVI, which stands for Grid Remote Application Virtualization Interface. This initially was an idea that that started out with discussions with me and my my boss Ian Foster, and he sort of as a joke he came up with he named it as a RAVI, which stands for Remote Application Virtualization Interface, and that gave me a lot of grief because I kept referring to myself in presentation. And I didn't know whether people were talking about me when I said RAVI or whether they were talking about a piece of software. So after a lot of pain, I stuck a G in front of it and made it GRAVI, so that now it's easy for me to present about it. And it is like GRAVI. It is something on top of a complex system that makes it easy to use it and creating. The basic takeaway from here is that if you have a command line application and a simple executable that you keep running on your laptop or on your desktop, you can take that application and quickly create a secure, robust web service or a grid service. And you can run the application on a cluster or on a virtual machine or on an Elastic Computing Cloud on Amazon. So GRAVI sort of reduces the barrier to entry even more into creating grid services. So it is created as an extension to introduce where the goal is you can create. I'm on slide number 10. You can wrap a application as a service very easily, just following the software wizard. It's like a step-by-step software wizard that you follow, and you end up with a deployable web service. And then GRAVI stores the service in a repository service. So in case you want to replicate the service even more, or you want somebody else to take a copy of your service and deploy it in their own infrastructure, they can go and get it from the repository service. The fact that that you store this this service is also advertised to a centralized registry. Index Service is our centralized repository. It's like a it's like Google for services. So you can go ask for the services that you want to that are available for deployment. And then when you're ready to sort of deploy the service, you can get the service from the repository service and deploy it in a container. Container is a web container like Tomcat or JBoss or WebLogic or what have you. So the goal is that end user, Brian is not is much more smarter than Homer Simpson, but the goal is that we want it to the end user to just be able to discover the service. The functionality that a user has, that a creator has provided, by going to the index service and discovering the service, and then invoking directly and getting results. So, the complexity that the user has to go through in order to invoke the web service is reduced to just going to a web page and clicking a button to invoke by providing the results that the user wants the analysis to run on. So the key goal for our work is to sort of find this. I mean, there are a lot of it's an 80-20 rule. I mean, Simple things should be easy. So a simple thing is taking the application that the user is running on his laptop and within a few keystrokes, the user is now able to share his application as a service, and his users or his collaborators can just go to a web page and invoke the service and get results. So instead of sharing the analysis and sharing the results, so sort of providing a much more easy to use infrastructure component. So so this is in nutshell what Gravy brings to the table. Once the creator of the service is done, Gravy automatically generates a widget for a web portlet for the service. So once the service is deployed, a user can fire up a browser and browse to a web page, a web portlet, and invoke the service securely. So that's our creating how a user or an end user would create these services to quickly share them across multiple users and collaborators of this virtual organization. And now on to slide number 11, where we talk about how one can discover these services. So once an end user creates these services, how other users can discover them. In this, on to next slide. So in this, we talk about two tools that we bring to the table for discovering services. Say, for example, the service that one of your users wrote is a big hit. For example, one of the services that we did to compare genome sequences using BLAST became an instant hit. A lot of people wanted to use it. Now you have a lot of these services. How are we going to distinguish different types of these services? So one way to distinguish the services is by adding semantic information to the services. So this is something that Introduce and Gravy will provide you with. You can easily annotate the service using name value pairs, and the semantics of the service are published to a centralized registry for easy discovery. And then the user who would like to use would not want to know whether he can really use it. And then you can also discover services using reputation. For example, services hosted at one organization are much more they're responsive than because of their superior infrastructure or by superiority of the data that they use. So you can, these are all different criteria in which you can discover services. So on to the next slide. Discovery is possible by going to different registries that these services are bootstrapped and are registered. So when you create services and deploy them, the service automatically registers to a centralized registry that the user can go and discover the services based on semantics or based on the input and output data, based on the application that the service is wrapping and what have you. And then the true power of on to next slide, slide number 15. The true power of this of creation of these services is realized when you compose these services into a new function, into a workflow. In that respect, we on to next slide. Slide number 16 is we kind of did an investigation of available tools that would make it easy for users to quickly compose these services into workflows that could be reused. Think of workflows as self-contained pieces of functionality that you can reuse and create workflows of workflows. For example, Taverna is one such tool that we in the spirit of not developing software, but in spirit of software reuse, we did an exhaustive analysis of available tools out there, and Taverna seemed to be easy to use, and we started improving it and adopting it to create workflows of the services that are created by Gravy. So once a user creates a bunch of services or he finds a set of services that he would like to use, he can easily create a pipeline using Taverna and keep repeatedly reusing and composing this workflow into another workflow, and I'm gonna talk a little bit more on how we did it in the case of the bio workflow that I wanted to highlight at the end of my presentation. Last but not the least, the slide number 17 is we want to once we start using the service, we want to host the service in a more sustainable infrastructure. It's definitely not sustainable if you are having your service on your laptop and a lot of users would want it. When you go home or when you suspend your laptop, the service is suddenly not available to a lot of to any users. So what you want to do is you want to take the service and give it to hosting services and host it on the infrastructure that are provided by, for example, National Science Foundation funds a huge infrastructure called TerraGrade that is the primary goal is to make these services available for end users. Provisioning services, we in Gravy on slide number 19, Gravy can provision services, can provision these applications as jobs on a cluster. So what Gravy does is it generates a job description, essentially, which is the way how you would submit an executable to a cluster or to TerraGrade or to any other open science grid installations that you may have available. So it sort of provides a virtualization layer so that the service is sitting on top of a huge infrastructure that the user doesn't really have to know. So once a user invokes a service, the service would turn around and submit and run the application as a job on a cluster on TerraGrid or Open Science Grid or on Amazon EC2 computing cloud. It doesn't really it doesn't really matter as long as the job succeeds or the application executes and returns the results of his analysis. So we've been using this model successfully in realizing some of the cancer bioinformatics grid use cases. On to slide number 20. This is another provisioning mechanism we have in Gravy. We can easily make Gravy create a EC2 compliant virtual machine image. Once you wrap it as a service, you can put this in a repository that I talked about before and provision it using cloud computing, which is another, there's been a lot of push in industry right now, and there seems to be a lot of return of investment by bringing these virtual machines on demand, where you can deploy the services onto a cloud and then start it up automatically. On to slide number 21. So this sort of shows you a typical web-based deployment, a portal-based deployment of a application of a Gravy service onto a cloud of resources. So all this work we've been doing as part of the Center for Enabling Distributed Petascale Science, the CIDAC Center. So this is sort of now you can pro- provision your applications and services on demand on a virtual on a EC2 cloud or on a science cloud that we have here at Argonne. So on to my next slide, slide number 22. So I'm going to talk. So all these I covered all the aspects of the service-oriented science, and to drive the point home. This is not a lot of hand-wavy vaporware kind of a thing. There are serious deployments of this model in the scientific community. I talked about the industry before, but I want to talk a little bit about the Cancer Bioinformatics Grid, the community, in my slide number 23, which is a classic example of service-oriented science. CABIG is a national NCI-funded program with participants from cancer centers and other research institutions. The goal of the program is to improve how cancer research is done and provide and accelerate the ways in which to find a cure for cancer. The goal is to make the tools, the applications, the analysis efficiently available to researchers that are part of this virtual organization. Say, for example, the Lombardi Cancer Center is very good at our proteomics data analysis, and the University of Chicago Cancer Center is very good at doing microarray analysis. Cancer research is a full pipeline, so a researcher would want both of these capabilities to be available for him. So CABIG provides that kind of infrastructure to provide easy access to researchers for of all the data and tools. So the goal is to create a scalable, federated, and actively managed bioinformatics network that would connect all the cancer research centers. Currently, the CABIG community it has more than 50 cancer centers. With spanning across different organizations and has around more than 900 participants. Actually, the last annual meeting that I went to, we had around 1,500 registered participants who took a lot of interest and are adopting to the CABIG way of the service-oriented way of doing things. On to my slide number 24. I just wanted to show the example scenario in the example CABIG scenario. As you can see, the CA grid. If you can run through all the animation real quick, you can see the different aspects of the service-oriented science here. So you have CA grid, you have a bunch of services here, metadata services, security services, and their high-level services called FQP and workflow services. And on the right-hand side, you have different databases, different analysis repositories that are located in different locations. As an end user, so the CA big use registered object definitions so that they're all semantically curated and are easy to discover, and when somebody says genome, everybody in the community know exactly what they're talking about, so that there's no ambiguity. That is sort of achieved by using metadata services and advertisement. This is another aspect of service oriented science. All the capabilities are the CA grid service interfaces that are advertised to the metadata services, so they're easy to so they can be discovered. And then the security is another aspect where you user logs onto and get good credentials. So all this is managed using a suite of services. Discovery is possible by when the user can go to the CA grid index service, the production index service, and can discover different data sets, different analysis available. And then sort of tie this all together using high-level services using workflows that use Taverna to orchestrate these services in meaningful patterns. want to say that, I mean, this is a sustainable, scalable infrastructure, and the NCI is committed, and it works right now. So the principles that we talked about, the tools are not just proof of concept anymore. They are production quality. They are being used right now. So next slide is when I want to talk a little bit about user's experience, and at the end of the slide, I want to introduce Brian Tiemann, who would talk about how he used Gravy and other tools to solve some scientific problems that in the advanced photon source community. So our early adopters like Brian and the cancer community, they love the Gravy system. They love the service oriented science system. Anybody who has read the book Crossing the Chasm, which is an excellent read, by the way, I would recommend all of you to just go and read it. The real goal is, I mean, there's always going to be a lot of early adopters who are excited about your software product, but sustainability is achieved when you cross this early adopter ness and then getting to the point where you have a fixed set of users and that are happy and use it on a daily basis. So our goal is to get to the point where we have early success is important, but we want to get to a point where we are sustainable and are usable across multiple scientific communities. We have around 45 services from 50 cancer centers from in CA Big that are created this way, and we have a bioinformatics group here at Argonne that do a lot of research on what is called transposons that's the part that I would talk more about after Brian presents about the EPS success. End users, so we had in the cancer community, we had an annual meeting, we had a hackathon where we had a bunch of end users try these technologies and they were able to quickly create workflows of programs and they were able to run them using Taverna. And as you can see, I mean, for adoption for communities, you know, they, like cancer centers would want to see return of investment. So I think they are on their path to, I mean, they are seeing the return, they are seeing that users are adopting and they do like the way, it's the reduction to barrier to entry seems to get us a lot of users. And without further ado, I would like to introduce Brian, who's gonna talk about the success he had in using Gravy in experiences with in APS. And then I will come back from slide number 26 in my presentation.
Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, Brian.
I just need to know there's somebody at the other end of the line is all. So my name is Brian Tiemann. I work with the Beamline Controls and Data Acquisition Group at the Advanced Photon Source, and I'm here to tell you a little bit about my experiences with Gravy. I'll tell you, because you're sitting at the other end of the phone here, that although I'm sitting in Ravi's office right now, we actually work in two different buildings across campus from each other, and it's really only through a chance happenstance of history that we've had the opportunity to work together on this project at all. So it's kind of nice that we are working on this project, but we really threw the dice to get this to happen, and we need to try and sort out that issue and see if there's some better ways to make our groups interact better. I'm going to move on to slide two. I know in Robbie's slides, he had a slide that had a photo of the APS. I've got a little icon drawing of the APS here on the right. That ring, just for scale, is about a third of a mile in diameter. And so if you look at that, it's a big building. And what this thing is it's a house for a large number of instruments, approximately 80 or so, that are expensive and big, and you're probably not going to build again. Or if you do, you're going to build a limited number of these things. So the mode of operation of this machine is people come to us. The government put forth a lot of money to build this. People come to us to use it because it's kind of a specialized machine. And you can see a number of users has been growing over the years. We currently have about 3,500 outside users. This is an international user community that comes in. A lot of universities from here in the States and a lot of research facilities and research groups from other nations come as well. And our number of publications, these are refereed journals, have been growing steadily as well. Each year we have, you know, close to 1,000 refereed journal publications. So there's a lot of science coming out of this machine. Without going into too many details of all the science, at the bottom there you see there's a techniques link. If you click on that link when you have a chance or go to that link, you'll see all the different techniques that the instruments that the APS are capable of doing. And there's also a science and research highlights page that the APS maintains that shows some of the key scientific advancements that were made at the APS. And these are typically, you know, a one-page write-up in human readable form, not in science speak. These are things we let to the press to let them know what the APS is doing. So I'd encourage you all to go there and see the broad range of science that we do. If we go on to slide 3, it takes a lot of software to get from our instrument to something that scientists can actually use to understand the world around them. If you look on the top there, that's a picture of one of the beam lines at the APS. That's the 2BM beam line. It's one of the instruments we use. What we did on this instrument, this was about 2 years ago, shortly after the Columbian, is we wanted to study the foam, the shuttle foam, to see why it flakes off in the way it does. And so on the bottom there, what you see is a 3D rendering of the shuttle foam, and that sort of darker band, more dense band down the middle, is the layer between two layers of foam where they think the foam is splitting and falling off. The scale there, that's about a millimeter and a half full size. So this is just one example of what we do. But in order to get there from instrument to that visualization, we need a lot of software. And this software comes from a lot of places. We have commercial vendors that control the instruments we use. We have my group, Beamline Controls and Data Acquisition, that writes a lot of the control software to coordinate the instrument and acquire the data. The Beamline staff and scientists often write their own analysis code or control scripts in order to do their specific techniques. A lot of these techniques are just emerging techniques, and there's no software available, so we have to write that. A lot of the external users bring in their analysis software or their own little control packages to perform the specific experiment they're interested on, and a lot of this is open source. And from my standpoint, what I have to do is sort of help the scientists support all these and run all these to make most efficient use of our resource, which is a limited resource. So it's quite a daunting task. There's a large number of software and a large number of users, and all of them want to do something different. But from dealing with all these guys, if we move on to slide 4, what we see is most of them want to do what's essentially a very simple workflow. Probably 95% of the scientists that perform science at the APS would work in this workflow, whether they realize it or not. In reality, there's a lot of applications that are, you know, inside those boxes, and a lot of permutations of those applications in order to get the science we need done, and this is really difficult to manage. And so we need tools to help us write our tools, is what it's turning out. And that's where the interaction with Ravi and the group over here in our Math Computer Science Division has really started to help us. We realized a couple years ago that maybe service-oriented architectures are the way to go. And at that time, I had started to go ahead and develop some, and then we got more involved with these guys and started looking at their tools. And now we'll go on to the meat of the topic here, slide 5. So I think what I'm mostly supposed to talk about here is the practical difference or practical application of or use of Gravi versus what a sort of standard developer might do. And Ravi said, I'm certainly smarter than Homer Simpson, but I think Bart Simpson might give me a run for my money. where a lot of us scientists, well, for instance, my background, I have a bachelor's in math and physics. I'm not even a computer programmer by trade. I never took a single computing program course in my life, and this is what I find myself doing routinely now. And by and large, that's what a lot of the scientists are. That we're not trained professional developers. We're just trying to get a job done, and we happen to have to use programming and computer science as a means to do that. So when I started this, thinking about service-oriented stuff a couple years ago, I sat down to develop my own service. And so in the developer column there, you see what I had to go through. I had to first research how you go about writing one of these things. I bought a couple of books. I searched everything I could on the Internet. I wound up taking a class or two, you know, one of these 2-3 day intense study, try and learn something classes. Cost a fair amount of money to get through this, and finally I got to the point where I can develop some example code just to see that I actually could do, you know, hello world. And now I can sit down and actually try and write my application. And what I found when I sat down to write my application is, you know, I wind up having a number of files and a number of lines of code, and it wasn't too bad as far as application development goes. And then I wanted to deploy this, and now I've got to do more research. How do I install Tomcat? How do I configure it to run my service? And finally, I got all this done, and I had my little sample code, and I was so proud of myself that I could run this thing. And then I looked back at what it took to get there, and it took me greater than a month of time, probably a month and a half, to get something up and running. Was it secure? No, I had no clue how to secure this thing. It was just an open service anybody can get to. What we really wanted the service to do is wrap around high-performance computing applications, parallel applications that tend to take hours to complete. So I needed status to know when my job was done. Did I have that status? No. I told the application to run. It ran, and I had to hope in an hour or so it was done. But it got the job done, and I have a sketchy and growing understanding of how to write these things. But if anything changes in my tool chain, and this has happened, you know, I got to go back to square one. It's another learning curve. Why do my tools no longer work? What do I need to do to keep them up to date? And that clearly is not going to work for hundreds of services. About that point, I got hooked up with Ravi here, and he showed me this Gravi service or Gravi tool, and I downloaded Introduce, and I learned what Introduce could do, and I downloaded the Gravi plugin for Introduce, and now I wanted to see how long would it take me to do the same service with this approach. And what I found is, well, you start up Introduce. There is a simple little wizard you fill in, and I had to learn what the fields are, but it wasn't too terribly hard. And when I was done, it deployed for me, and I dropped it into my Tomcat container, and it ran. So it took me, I got 2 days here. It actually took me less than an afternoon to get something up and running. I inflated that a little bit because I had learned some stuff while I was doing my other service. But it took a very short time to get something up and running. And it was secure. I had credentials. I could lock people out of it. It was not an open service. I could track who was logging into it. It did provide notification for my longer running applications. I could start up a cluster for an hour and monitor its progress on what was going on. I really had some background at this point on what services were, but I would feel comfortable handing this to a scientist and teaching them how to use it. And that they'd be able to use it to get the job done. And, you know, more importantly, if something changes, I'm relying on Ravi to keep the tool up to date and take care of the infrastructure for me. All I have to do is rerun his tool on my service, and it should be up to date and to new technologies as they emerge. So finally, moving on to six, slide number six, we found this to be a useful tool. We do have a prototype running. We have not reached critical mass to where it's a operational tool, but there are some of us that do use it routinely, and we would like to add more to it. But what we found is Gravi itself could use some enhancements. And as a developer myself, when I'm trying to find these software applications or develop these software applications for end users, one of the gauges I have of whether or not the application is useful is if somebody comes back and asks for me to improve it. If they're coming back and saying, boy, this is good, but I'd like to have this, or this is bad, and I'd like to have this changed, that means they're interested in your tool. Otherwise, they just go on to find another tool and never hear from them again. So I have come back to Ravi several times. I am interested in his tool. Here are some of the things that I would like to see him improve, and I think some of these he has gone on and done or at least in progress. On the server side, it's easy to use. It is a little tedious if you have to sit down and wrapper a bunch of legacy applications, and that's the situation we're at the APS. We've got a lot of legacy applications, old Fortran codes, old C codes, that are ideal for this sort of a tool. And after I created my first one, I sat down and said, oh, great, let me try wrapping some of these other things. And it gets a little redundant and tedious, and I think there's something that could be done about that for our environment anyway. And then on the client side, there's some tediousness in managing the resource. It does generate some code. I think it can auto-generate some more client-side code for us to alleviate some of this extra code writing that I find myself doing for every single service. But more importantly, the way it allows you to manage a long-term and an asynchronous application is it gives you an endpoint reference. So if I start up something like a parallel application that's going to take a few hours to complete, it gives me a reference that I can use at a later time. I can detach my client, I can reattach my client at a later time, use that endpoint reference to check on the status of the application. And I think there can be a lot done to help take care of the bookkeeping of managing all these endpoint references if you're running a number of services. And then what we're really interested is workflows. And our environment, we're just now starting to try and train people to understand that what they're really doing is a workflow, and rather than have them in the middle of linking all these applications together, that this can be orchestrated in some way, and Taverna looks like a good way to do that. So we really like to see the Taverna integration and the Gravi integration much better so that we can use Gravi to generate a service that would just automatically work in Taverna in some sort of nice non-developer way. And we'd like to see that run on the server side so we can build up a catalog of workflows for different techniques so when the user comes in, they can sit down. We don't have to train them too much on how to use the machine. We can load up the workflow that they're interested in and science just happens. They acquire the data and the path is laid out, and they follow through to the end, and when they're done, they see the results and take them home. So that's all I had to say. So I'm going to turn it back over to Ravi at this point.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks, Punch, for coming here and sharing some of the some information with the rest of the community here. So I'm on to slide number 26 here. So this is one user community that we interacted. We worked with the GE Workbench community from Columbia University. They are a big bioinformatics group. They provide their analysis, software analysis, as open source, and they have a dedicated loyal customer user base that use their applications and their analysis day in and day out in bioinformatics. So they have some analysis that they were running. It was a hierarchical clustering analysis that they were running on users' laptops or desktops. and it usually take used to take 10 minutes of the time of the CPU time, and they would schedule their coffee runs around. I mean, they would run analysis and go for coffee and come back, and results are there because they can't use their machine anymore because the analysis is just taking up the whole, all of the CPU. We worked with them, and we worked with them, and they created a gravy service where they wrapped the gravy, the hierarchical clustering executable, and then made gravy to submit that that executable as a job onto TeraGrid, a national computing infrastructure that is provided for CFA. Since analysis is being now using Gravy, they can run it on a cluster instead of just on their desktops. Now, whenever the users interact with this service, they get their results in 3 minutes, which is definitely 7 minute saving from what they had. And it's not even running on their machines; it's running on a cluster. On a high performance, much more powerful machine remotely. So at some level, we sort of were able to provide this virtualization layer for the end user so that they can run their analysis on high performance computing infrastructure. And as Gravy, since it's you are creating a web server, a grid service, it's strongly typed, so it's in line with the other design constraints of a CA big service. Onto slide number 27. Not only just the functionality, so we also integrate the security framework that into Gravy that would make it more applicable to other to production quality IT infrastructures out there. So as you can see, authorization, authentication, making sure group-based authentication, attribute-based authorization, all these are adding on to Gravy. So we are just reusing a bunch of software pieces that were developed and integrated with Introduce. So sort of provides a solution and not just a one thing that you do and then you need to clamber around for doing other things. So it sort of provides a one-stop shop creating a service, securing it, and provisioning it. On to slide number 28. This is another DOE application, the group that we worked with here at the Argonne National Laboratory. They have a workflow. They have that deals with transposons, which are a small mutant sequences of DNA that move between genome of the cell. I have a little background here for the work that. We had a summer student from Carnegie Mellon University who is completely unaware of bioinformatics or grid or web services, Java, in fact. So we hired him as our end user who would, so the task for him was to, by end of his 8-week internship, he needs to come up with a workflow that would be used here for the bioinformaticians in understanding and analyzing these transposons. So the workflow onto slide number 29 is essentially taking genome sequences and sending it to FormatDB. There are a set of applications, there are a set of executables there that are applications that are an analysis on set of input data and set of genome sequences. And then the goal is to create this workflow and create all the services that are needed to create this workflow using Gravy. And on to slide number 30. So this is a product of an 8-week internship that from a summer student who is not familiar with any of these technologies that he's been working with. He was able to quickly create a workflow with all these applications. All the purple boxes here. All the purple boxes here are applications that he was able to wrap using Gravy. And he actually created a workflow of workflows. So as you can see, the box, the nested workflow box is a independent workflow of its own, and it could be reused. And then there's another, so he nested it in another workflow to provide more, much more functionality. So this is a clear, for us it was a clear win, because we wanted to make sure that these tools are ready for end users before we tell people that they are. I'm going to skip slide number 31 because Brian already talked about it. This is sort of the workflow that that Brian was able to do with a set of applications that he was able to wrap using Gravy. So on to slide number 32. I want to talk a little bit about some of the lessons we learned. The Gravy system, the service-oriented fine system, provides a nice level, higher level abstraction for, I'm not going to sit here and say that this is going to be useful for everybody and everything can be done using this way, but I suspect that there's a fair amount of use cases, a subset of scientific computing use cases could be achieved by using this system. And one of the goals is to create a sustainable infrastructure, not to create, the conferences that I go to, I see a lot of heroism in a lot of papers that are being published. There are one-off things that people do, but the goal is not to just to help these 20% of heroism. I'm sure that they're trailblazers and they're very useful for what they're doing. But the goal is to provide a more sustainable infrastructure for a lot of other users who are on the edge and they're looking into this and figuring out if it is useful for them and if they can easily use it or not. It sort of works well with existing IT infrastructures that are out there. And one thing we learned is workflows are very important and they're useful and people like them, people want them. Scalability is once your workflows are more popular, then that becomes an issue. We want to make sure that the infrastructure can deal with increasing demand. Provenance is another big ticket item that we sort of get it for free from Taverna. What we do is in the workflow that in Gravy we can automatically record the data sets and the analysis and the date and times of these analyses and other details that would enable somebody else to reproduce this result set. I've been reading some articles on in the Nature magazine is how hard it is to reproduce somebody else's research or workflow. So one of the things they were proposing is that people would attach their workflows to the papers, so scientists could verify and reproduce some of the science that is being talked about in the publication. And then since we are all open source, we reuse other open source product. There's no vendor lock-in unless you want to take this and deploy it in another proprietary software standard. Last slide. These are all a list of further details. If you want to go, and I'm sure Susan will have this slide online, and you can download them. And there are URLs to go for Taverna and integration of Gravy. We sort of have a wiki where we documented how our undergrad student Jem created a bunch of services using Gravy and created a Taverna workflow orchestrating them. And if you have any questions, feel free to join the mailing list, Gravy users mailing list at globus.org. It's a major Domo email list. You can go to the link above, and you can it has instructions on how you can join and how you can. I want to thank again to all of you for hearing us out, and we strongly believe that we are on to something that is reusable and helpful to a lot of user communities out there. and we are here to help you answer any questions that you may have, to maybe give another presentation or two if it makes sense. And I want to again thank Susan for giving us this opportunity to present and to talk to you all. Thank you. Thank you again.
Ravi, and you're very welcome, and thank you, and thank you to Brian for this excellent introduction to Gravy. Please join me. Really powerful, and it's so nice to hear from the one of your important users and the feedback. And now we'll turn to people in the room who might have questions, and I'm also going to head to the chat room to see if there are any questions there.